ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Oh, hello. What am I doing? Well, I'm making tomorrow's breakfast. Yes, some things just take a little time, a little care. So, here I am, taking steamed oat grains and hand-rolling them with this little stone roller mill. Just takes a few moments, really. And then an overnight soak and, hey presto, good pinch of salt, and we have perhaps the finest thing ever produced from a handful of oats and a bit of water. Yes, porridge. I'm Jonathan Green, and this is Every Bite from ABC Radio National. It's all about food and the places where food, culture, science, and history collide. This week, oats, salt, and water. The miracle of porridge. Okay, so not everyone rolls their own oats for breakfast. And I'm not here to begrudge anyone the convenience of a sachet of quick oats cooked up in a microwave, because not everyone takes their porridge so seriously. But for those who do, there's a world of flavour, texture and variation to explore. And for the most accomplished of oat aficionados out there, there's even a World Porridge Making Championship held in Scotland each year. It's known as the Golden Spurtle. For the uninitiated, we'll get to spurtles a little later on. But even I, a diligent hand roller of oats and porridge zealot that I am, would not be allowed to compete for the Golden Spurtle using my preferred form of oats.
You're not allowed to use rolled oats. You'll get kicked out of the town hall and sent packing.
Sydney-based chef Toby Wilson is a two-time finalist in the Golden Spurtle, and it turns out that making porridge from rolled oats, I dare say the oat of choice in much of the world, is not considered the Scottish way. The Scottish preference is stone ground oats, which is how Toby prepares his own. But, and here's the twist, he came to his method via a rather unusual route, making tortillas for tacos.
It's been almost a decade of making tacos. It was just something that was really misrepresented in Sydney and probably this whole country. We never really had a great representation of what that food was. So I started a three-month pop-up in 2016, and here we are in 2025, and I'm still doing it.
Those worlds collide, as I understand it, when you grind your groats.
Correct.
Talk us through that, because I suspect groats is not a word that many listeners might be familiar with.
It's not a sexy word. The oat groat is kind of the whole oat before it's been processed, so either stone ground or cut or steamed and rolled, like your box of Uncle Toby's oats might be. So it's the whole grain intact. And I happen to have a stone mill that we use for grinding corn for tortillas to make tacos, and I used that to stone grind my own oats.
I'm completely on board with you. I'm a hand grinder of groats myself.
And oh, lovely.
It's the only way to make porridge.
Agreed.
Tell us why, in your view. What do you get in terms of flavour and texture as a result of that?
Yeah, so in terms of flavour, it's actually quite an interesting experience to taste fresh grain. We're so used to the grains we eat being from, you know, often well over 12 months old. By the time we eat them, they've lost their freshness. So you can really taste. Vibrancy might be too much of an extreme word for grain, but there is kind of like a life to it that you can taste. And it's much less flat and less stale, I guess. But the big thing for me is definitely texture. So rolled oats are steamed and flattened, so you can cook them really, really quickly. People don't have much time in the mornings, and you can cook oats really, really fast with that product. But when you use steel-cut oats or stone-ground oats, which might take 20 or 30 minutes to cook, it's much less kind of pasty and claggy, and you get a product that's a lot creamier, and then the grains are chewy and they've got bite to them and they're quite nutty, like when you have a really well-made risotto.
Mm.
And it's really creamy because of the starch that's come out of the rice, not because you've added dairy to it. And it's this really creamy, starchy sauce with these nice, chewy little kernels floating in it.
Talk us through your porridge process.
Well, there's my competitive process and then there's what I do at home, because when I'm at home, it's probably a little bit lazier. I mean, in competition, you only have 20, 30 minutes to cook a bowl of porridge. So everyone will soak theirs overnight just to shorten the length it takes to cook. And I usually go 3 parts water to 1 part oats. And I will just get that up to a gentle simmer and I'll let that just kind of blip along, slowly stirring it. And as it starts to thicken, I'll continuously taste it for both seasoning and texture. And once the kernels kind of get to the point that I like, I kind of prefer it to be, I guess you'd almost call it al dente, that little bit of bite. Then I'll kind of do that final pinch of salt. That's what you present in competitive porridge. It's just oats, water, and salt. That's it. And then at home, I will add brown sugar and then either just like a little dribble of fresh cream or it will be a little pat of butter on top.
Tell us about your spurtles.
So for anyone who doesn't know, which is most people, a spurtle is a traditional stirring implement for porridge, and it is not much more...
It's a stick.
It's not much more complex than a stick. It's an ever so slightly pointy stick, the idea being that you can kind of get into those corners of your saucepan that a spoon might not be able to get into, but also kind of can. But yeah, it is a very old Scottish implement. I have a few of them. You get given a commemorative one as a contestant each year at the Golden Spurtle. So I have a couple from there. And then I had another one gifted to me by a friend. So yeah, I do have a strange growing collection of wooden sticks in my second drawer in the kitchen now.
And of course, the important thing traditionally is to wield your spurtle in a clockwise direction, lest it summon the devil.
You can't let the evil spirits into the porridge.
I do wonder if, though, for somebody in the Southern Hemisphere, we reverse that polarity.
I'd never thought about that. Maybe I've been making evil porridge for the last 4 years.
So, to the World Championships, the Golden Spurtle.
Mm-hmm.
Describe that experience.
There are a few places I love more in the world. It is a tiny town, Kybridge. Population, I think, is 700. About 600 of them love the event and 100 hate that it exists, and it's kind of put them on the map. And it takes place in the town hall of Kybridge, which is also their badminton court, and it's where they hold council meetings, and everything in this town kind of happens in this town hall. But one day a year it becomes the stadium for the World Porridge Championships. 30 competitors, 5 heats. You get half an hour to present 3 bowls of porridge, and they get blindly judged, and at the end of the day they reveal the winner. But the day starts with, weather permitting, an opening ceremony, which is about I'm going to call it a 30-meter march from down the road into the town hall, complete with a Scottish marching band, drums, bagpipes, and everyone's encouraged to bring a flag from their home country. So that's pretty much the closest I'm ever going to get to feeling like an Olympian, I think.
Okay, the flag bearer for Australia is with Toby Wilson. Were you prepared for this when you arrived? Did you have any inkling of what was about to unfold?
Yeah, I was so fascinated by this event when I first found out about it that I found out everything humanly possible about it. I guess particularly being insane enough to fly 30 hours to this town and use my annual leave and savings to compete in a porridge competition, I felt I should at least try and find out as much as I can and be as prepared as possible.
Were you confident in your game?
I was, foolishly or not, but I'd put in the work, and almost every morning I would make at least a couple bowls of porridge, one that was the kind of style that I had thought was best into this point, and then I would try a variation of it, be it a different oat or different salt or more salt or soaked overnight versus not, and just trying to understand all of the variables behind a bowl of porridge.
As you looked about you, as your co-competitors made their porridge, were you noticing variations in technique or in a finished product?
Yeah, so they set up a station in the side room of the town hall where you can taste everyone's porridge throughout the day. So over the 2 years I went, I've tried many variations of porridge, and it's probably the one thing that stuck with me is how incredibly different two bowls of porridge can be from each other, given that they are only using oats, water, and salt. You've got some that are really thick and you could almost turn the bowl upside down and it wouldn't fall out. And then you've got some that are really runny, some that are really salty, some that are chunky, some that are smooth. The whole spectrum of oats are there just sitting on the table, and it's no two are particularly alike.
And everybody must have that fervent sense that this is the way you do it.
Yeah, I mean, I did try some of the other ones in the final, and it really is hard to choose which one is better. And I think on any given day, most of those top six probably could have won.
Toby Wilson, taco chef, porridge enthusiast, and two-time finalist in the World Porridge Making Championship, the Golden Spurtle. He also features in an Australian-made documentary about that competition. Well, as Toby said, there are 30 competitors in each year's contest, with heats determining a top six who go through to the final. And from those six, a winner is crowned. The Golden Spurtle is bestowed. So by my calculations, that's 36 bowls of plain porridge. Nothing but oats, water, and salt. That's what the judges have to distinguish between. Think about it. Trying to taste fine grains of difference in 36 bowls of porridge. It's a Herculean task. But fear not. This year's guest judge is well prepared.
I have porridge every morning for my breakfast. Actually, I'm such a stereotypical Scotsman. I'm just back from my US book tour, and I took my own porridge oats with me just in case I couldn't get any. Well, Falcha, I'm Cunioch MacLeod, the Hebridean baker.
Your book, The Hebridean Baker, Recipes and Wee Stories from the Scottish Islands, I'm guessing that may contain traces of oats.
Oh my goodness, a whole chapter in my first book, in fact. And I think for me, a big part of why I started to write my cookbooks now, is finding recipes that aren't just delicious, because that's quite important, but have amazing stories behind them. And for sure, the ones in my oats chapter, they have the best stories. There's a wonderful dish called a bride's bonne, for example, from Shetland. It's a classic shortbread recipe, actually, made with oats, made by the mother of the bride on the day of her daughter's wedding. And rather than gifting her this beautiful piece of shortbread, the mother of the bride smashes it over her daughter's head as she walks back into marital home. And all the guests run towards her to try and catch a piece of this adorned shortbread to put under their pillows at night. The best stories.
Well, how central, I mean, to the non-Scottish listener, how central is the oat to Scottish food?
I would say it is. I mean, we always wax lyrical about our salmon, about our venison, about all these kind of wonderful wild produce that we have, from scallops to prawns. But, you know, I think every young boy wanted one thing. On your kitchen table every morning, there'd be a box. And on that box, there was a big, burly, handsome man in a kilt. And he was the porridge oats man. And you were told that if you ate your porridge every morning, you would look like that. And spoiler alert, I don't. but I still every morning dreamed. I still probably do dream every morning that I look like the porridge oats man.
That's porridge, P-O-R-A-G-E, which is a slight distinction, but
it is, which I still, to be fair, I hope you're not going to ask me to clarify that, because even I still don't really understand that. I think it's just a marketing thing. But
when you're making your routine, if I can call it that, breakfast porridge, what are your oat preferences?
I would say I like my oats the way I like my men, chunky. but I do mix up how I make my oats, you know, throughout the year. Obviously, in the Edra Hebrides, our winters, they're a wee bit harsh. So I do love a very warming bowl of porridge through the winter time. But I've very much been kind of influenced by that kind of European style of Berkshire now for my kind of summer porridge. So that's exactly what I had this morning. Cold oats kind of cooked overnight, filled with kind of healthy things like chia seeds and flaxseed and grated apple and some dried fruit. And yum, I literally jump out of bed every morning excited to have my bowl of porridge. When people say, do you want to go out for breakfast? I'm like, yeah, yes, but can I have my porridge first before we go for breakfast?
I wonder what the porridge oats man would make of your chia flaxseed infiltrated Berkshire porridge.
I know, I'm a bit fancy these days, but I'm sure he'd give me a nod. I'm sure he would.
Now, of course, at the Golden Spurtle, you are a judge.
Oh my goodness, I feel like I've been called up for the Scottish national team. You know, this is huge. I don't know that it is something that's bigger in the food world than being a judge at the World Porridge Making Championships. It's, yeah, what an honour.
I wonder if in your mind, is this prospect looms, do you have a picture in your mind of the perfect bowl? And can you describe that to me?
I think definitely a big part for me will be the texture. You know, I do, even though it is simply water that is creating the texture, you do want a creamy bowl of porridge. You know, you don't really want the grittiness. I want there to be texture, definitely, and contrast, but I do want to be able to just to kind of take a spoonful for it not to be too watery, for it to hold together. And just to enjoy it and just get that little bit of salt, not too much, so it kind of balances the dish.
Because, of course, you're tasting it unadorned. It is purely the porridge, no fussy additions of, like, sugar or butter.
You're right. And I think this is the thing, because when I'm writing the recipes or finding recipes for the cookbooks, of course I'm looking for that twist. You know, I'm looking for the story, and that's something they can't really tell. And so it's all about just that bowl.
From ABC Radio National, you're listening to Every Bite. I'm Jonathan Green, and that's Kenyach MacLeod, the Hebridean baker, and this year's guest judge at the Golden Spurtle. He's full of excitement now, but how will he fare after 36 bowls, I wonder? Let's ask someone who knows all too well.
You'll notice that I don't judge anymore after having done it once. It sounds crazy because it's just a bowl of porridge, but you will be amazed. Every one of them tastes different. Mm. Every one of them has different properties. But by the time you've got to sort of bowl 29, it's a challenging gig. I'd much rather stand at the front with a microphone and chat. My name is Sarah Rankin. I am a chef and food writer and the MC of the Golden Spurtle World Porridge Making Championships.
You made your name on MasterChef. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I was a finalist in 2022, the UK competition. I finished fourth and decided that I was going to change my career. I've always loved food and loved cooking and kind of had always had it as a hobby. But that kind of gave me the springboard to have the opportunity to do it for a living. So I wrote a cookbook. I'm now a private chef and broadcaster, event host, all sorts of different things. It's a whole new world has opened out to me.
What took you first to the Golden Spurtle?
So I grew up in Inverness, which is just a wee while, 10, 15 miles north of the village of Carbridge. I know Carbridge very well. I spent most of my childhood holidaying in the Cairngorms National Park, as did my children. And we were always there when the Spurtle was happening. And then when I was on MasterChef, they invited me to come along and be a judge.
And of course, it's a big thing for Carbridge.
It's huge for the village. It is huge. It's a tiny, tiny place. And it's been going since 1994, when a couple of enterprising, a hotelier and a kind of restaurateur, decided how can we kind of encourage tourism, more tourism in the village, because at that time, sort of October time, was really the off season. They got their heads together and said, oh, a porridge making championship, that would be good fun. And there it is, and it's just grown year on year. We've got competitors from all over the world. This year, I think there's 12 different countries represented. People come from the USA and Canada and Australia and New Zealand, all over the place. And yeah, it's a huge, huge thing for the village. And locals come obviously and watch and visit, but we live stream it as well on YouTube, so anyone in the world can see the whole thing happening.
Watching people cook porridge is not intrinsically fascinating.
Perhaps not. But I spend a lot of time. I mean, the thing is not the porridge. The thing is the people. It's the competitors and the reasons that they're there. They are just a fantastic bunch of people. You know, they're fun, they're interesting, they're eccentric, you know, they're wonderful. And my job is to kind of draw out their personality so that the audience can find out all about them. And that's the best part of it.
The 12 countries, as you say, in this year's event. So people from around the world making porridge with the sort of precision that would take themselves to a world championship. As a Scotswoman, that must be something of a sense of pride. Here is this thing which has girdled the globe.
It's beautiful. It is a beautiful thing. And actually, there's a tradition of porridge maker, not necessarily porridge, but using oats all around the world. I mean, oats are, you know, Paleolithic, probably 32,000 years ago or something, wild oats were growing and sort of hunter-gatherers were getting a hold of them. They started to be cultivated in Scotland sort of when the Romans came. But there's lots of other countries in the world that have similar dishes. So we always get lots of competitors from Scandinavia, for example. They use lots of oats as well and all over the place, particularly where there's a Scottish diaspora. So USA, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, they're obviously very well represented as well.
Chef, author and Golden Spurtle MC, Sarah Rankin. Now, Sarah points out, porridge didn't originate in Scotland, but the Scots are perhaps the most enthusiastic peoples when it comes to boiled grains as a dietary staple. So, how far back does this history go?
Thousands of years. So, oats have been certainly grown in Scotland since the medieval times, if not before. We have archaeological evidence of people cooking grains in pots since as early as the Stone Age on Scottish islands. Whether that was oats as we know it, probably not, but certainly given our climate, hardy forms of wheat and grass like oats were one of the first things we would have cooked regularly, certainly. I'm Dr. Lindsay Middleton, and I am a food historian based in Scotland.
This must be a fairly universal experience amongst so many peoples around the world, that to take a grain, to add water and heat to that, is just one of the foundations of cooking for humans.
Absolutely, and it would have been something that you ate probably numerous times throughout the day because it was easy, it was typically quite cheap. You would have normally had a pot of porridge that was just kind of cooking away all the time that you would have had for your breakfast, lunch or dinner. Certainly as time moves on in Scotland and meat becomes expensive, people are moving to cities, porridge would have still been a staple for a vast majority of the population. And we found it hard to grow finer forms of wheat in this country because of our climate. So things like white bread would have been only available in the sort of 18th and 19th century if you're quite well off.
It's a life-saving thing, isn't it, for a place of harsh environment and often people eking a slender living.
Absolutely. And we've had potatoes in Scotland for a very long time, but they were introduced far after grains. And typically early in their uptake, they were seen as animal food, whereas the grain, you could do so much with it. So as well as porridge, you could make things like brose. We've got a really interesting history of using all forms of the oat in Scotland. So there was also a drink called sowens that was made from the fermented husk of the oat after you'd made your porridge. And that was then used to make bread. So we almost have a sort of sourdough starter going on there. So we would use every part just as a sort of money-saving thing when there was quite often throughout the year, not much else to be had.
What does it mean to the Scots, do you think? What place does it hold in the Scottish imaginary?
I think it holds quite a dear place in the Scottish imaginary. You know, people hear Scotland and you think haggis, you think whiskey, you think porridge. And it runs through a lot of our literature, historical to present. In cookbooks, historical cookbooks and recipes, there's always recipes for porridge. And I think what makes it so special is that everyone has their own tale of porridge. So when I'm speaking to people and asking them about their food history, one of the things I'll always ask them is how you take your porridge. And it can be a topic of great debate or in great division, but I think we share it as a country that takes pride in making good out of not a lot historically.
That's such an interesting question, and I guess such a point of recognition.
Exactly. I think a lot of the foods that we as Scots have as our kind of national foods, whether that is our haggis, whether it's, you know, even whiskey to an extent, but also things like shortbread, they hold such a dear place in our hearts, but they are all more or less foods of the poor, foods of people who've had to be imaginative with what they have and have still managed to create things that they celebrate.
Isn't there a thing you do with porridge where you put it in a drawer?
Yes. So the porridge drawer, you would store your porridge in a drawer throughout the day. The idea being you would then pull out your drawer and cut a slice of porridge. And by that point, it would have solidified so much that you were almost eating what we might now think of as a flapjack, but it would have probably been far less delicious.
I think the modern kitchen should institute the porridge drawer as a matter of urgency.
I was talking with some friends recently, and we were talking about Scottish people having porridge drawers, but also tales of people in poorer households in Scotland also sometimes having to make a drawer, a bed for the youngest child or the baby of the household. So you really wouldn't want to mix up your porridge drawer and your baby drawer. That would go badly wrong.
Food historian, Dr. Lindsay Middleton. And how to accessorize the groat mill. Obvious. A porridge drawer. Which may be taking the whole thing a little too far. But then, porridge seems to be the most egalitarian and open-minded of breakfasts. Cook it quick, cook it slow, cook it salty, cook it sweet, make it lumpy, make it smooth. As Goldilocks once observed, it's just right. Every Bite is your weekly journey to the places where food, culture, science and history collide. Every Bite tells a story. And thanks to our guests, Toby Wilson, Cognac McLeod, Sarah Rankin and Lindsay Middleton. Now, for the next few weeks, we're bringing you our favourite episodes from 2025 as part of Radio National Summer. We first broadcast this episode in August, and since then, this year's Golden Spurtle winner has been crowned. Top honour went to a Norwegian, but the winner in the specialty category was an Australian, Caroline Velick. She won for her porridge jaffles. The documentary film, The Golden Spurtle, that's now in general release, so check your local listings. Every Bite, it's made on Wurundjeri country and produced by Kim Jurek. I'm Jonathan Green.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.